and welcome to yet another episode of the Anxiety Rx podcast. I am your host, Dr. Russell Kennedy, a medical doctor and clinical neuroscientist who struggled with extreme anxiety for many, many years. And I wish I knew then what I know now about anxiety. My life would have been completely different. So that's why I made this podcast, to help you shortcut a lot of the pitfalls that I fell into in believing that I could heal my anxiety just by using my mind. Because I've come to know that anxiety lives in your body, not just the mind. Now, most people believe that anxiety is a thought problem, and that is understandable because we see our thoughts so clearly, but we don't feel so much. We're much more versed in thinking and using our words than we are feeling. It's much easier to describe something in detail, how it appears, than how it feels. And we're not used to feeling. We're not used to connecting with our feeling. And I think that's part of the big problem, because we start thinking that the thoughts are the root of the problem, when the thoughts are just a symptom. The thoughts are just the mirror of what's happening in your body. And anxiety and alarm, as I call it, is often rooted in unresolved pain, typically from childhood, stored in our body, what I call background alarm. It occurred in the background of your life, but it stays in the background of your psyche, of your consciousness. And this is what I call background alarm. It sits there and it can get triggered by anything. Have you ever had the experience where you're just driving down the street and just feeling horribly anxious and alarmed for no reason? Well, it may be there is a reason. Maybe the reason is something that you weren't aware of that's happening in your life, something that your subconscious mind is ruminating on, and yet you're not fully aware of it. This is why I say that anxiety lives in your body more than your mind, and it can come up at any time. I do believe that the body holds implicit memories, specifically from our childhood. So painful emotions that are too overwhelming for the mind when we were younger get stored in our body, because our body is a representation of the unconscious mind. So if we can't handle things consciously, we stuff it down into the subconscious or unconscious. And as the unconscious is represented by the body keeps the score, that trauma will get stored in our bodies. And that what creates the background alarm. That's what creates the background alarm in our body that drives the worries of our mind. We're so busy trying to fix the thoughts, but the thoughts are just a mirror of what's happening in the body. It's like touching a hot stove. We don't think it. We feel it. We feel the anxiety. And then our mind, being a meaning-making, make-sense machine, has to do something with that. It has to do something with that alarm feeling. So it takes the alarm feeling and turns it into alarm thinking. And alarm thinking is really what we see as our worries. Now, this background alarm is silent and insidious fuel for the anxiety of the mind. And the unconscious body-based alarm can simmer there for decades. I know it did with me. And it's often the reason that anxiety feels like it comes out of nowhere. You're reacting to the pain that hasn't been consciously felt or processed yet. And because the body is a representation of the mind, it holds that pain. We think that if we can just worry our way out, we can find a solution. That's why worry is seen as protective. Worry is something we do to try and make the uncertain appear more certain. And in that certainty, we feel that there's going to be some safety, but there never is, because the worries you create, the warnings, what ifs, and worst case scenarios that you create make more alarm in the long run. They may make you feel better in the short term by kind of resolving a little bit of that uncertainty, but in the long term, they just create more alarm that feeds the background alarm, that feeds the worries, that gets you caught in this alarm anxiety cycle. So we really need to feel it to heal it. And that's why body-based practices can trigger buried emotions. I remember teaching yoga classes, and many people, not because I was a bad teacher, I hope, but many people would get really emotional during different poses, because the body links the emotion to a certain state of movement or lack of movement. If you felt immobilized, if you felt frozen and restricted, that feeling will also trigger your alarm. And also, ironically, breaking out of the freeze can actually trigger your worry as well, because it becomes unfamiliar. That freeze is familiar for you. It's like that t-shirt that says, I'm in my own little world, but it's okay, they know me here. You know, to heal anxiety, you've got to go through the body, not just the mind. And I think that's why most traditional therapies fail, is they try and fix your thoughts way too much. I like to use an iceberg analogy when it comes to anxiety and alarm. The anxious thoughts are just the tip of the iceberg, what you can see above the surface. And we can clearly see our worries. We know our worries intimately, and they're the tip of the iceberg. We see them quite clearly. But it's the massive bulk of background alarm underneath that's the real root cause of what's creating the anxiety in the first place. So when we treat the anxiety, we just treat the tip of the iceberg, we're not really making a dent in the actual root cause of the problem, which is this tremendous alarm stored beneath the mind in the body. So in my book, Anxiety RX, I talk about the ego dragon, this overprotective but misguided force, because the dragon is powerful. We incarnated this dragon as a 4, 5, and 6-year-old, and maybe even earlier, to protect us. And the ego isn't about arrogance. It's about protection. And anxiety ultimately is about protection. We think that the worries are protecting us. That's why we are afraid to let them go. The worries become our kind of special friend. And if I'm going to show you a way to push away from your special friend, that is going to ironically increase anxiety in your system. So our amygdala has no sense of time. So our amygdala is constantly searching for danger. It's constantly searching for our past in our future, if that makes sense. It means well, but often the amygdala gets things very wrong. We have a hair trigger to fire up our sympathetic nervous system, but we don't really have the evidence behind that sympathetic nervous system to validate what we're afraid of. So what we do is we make worries to validate this feeling of alarm that's in our body. Our ego and our insula and our default mode and the amygdala are all related together, and they get wired in this overprotective way. So if we experience a painful event in our childhood, like being bitten by a dog, that creates this program in us that the ego dragon, because it's an omnipotent force, that ego is very powerful. It's trying to protect you, and it tries to protect you from anything even remotely close. So you might react to a dog or a rabbit or anything that hurts you in the past. And unfortunately, we wire this in so deep that just words, just having a conversation with your therapist isn't going to heal that. So your world starts to shrink because you imagine these threats and you extrapolate and you generalize that the fear that you feel in your body as background alarm is accurate and warranted because your nervous system gets forged in this sort of overprotective mode. So your brain has to follow that. It has to follow that overprotection of your body with overprotection in your mind, which is creating warnings, what ifs, worst case scenarios. So this is how we become hypervigilant. Our body is in this state of fight or flight, and our mind, being a meaning-making, make-sense machine, has to make sense of that. And it makes sense of it by creating negative stories to match the negative feeling of alarm that sits in our body. Another way of saying this is when you have a hypervigilant body, alarm state in the body, you create a hypervigilant mind as well. And the mind starts looking for things to be afraid of. So if you have a panic attack in a grocery store, the ego will mark that place as unsafe with the amygdala. And the amygdala, the central nucleus of the amygdala, I don't want to get too technical, but it recognizes things that have hurt you in the past. And it creates this alarm state in your body very quickly, this fight or flight state in your body very quickly. So you begin avoiding places or people or sensations like the alarm to try and protect yourself from it. But when you protect yourself from the alarm, you never metabolize it. In fact, it just gets worse. And then the overprotective mind takes that increase in alarm in your body to narrow your life further and further and further. You stop driving. You stop going to any type of store. This is where the avoidance actually makes anxiety worse, because it's unwittingly making the alarm worse, making you more fearful, making you believe that the world is an unsafe place. As a result of believing the world's an unsafe place, this alarm becomes chronic. This alarm anxiety cycle becomes how you live your life, because you're always on guard and your ego is dominating your life, always trying to protect you, always keeping you on edge. So even if you don't realize it, if your nervous system is defending all the time, it becomes the natural state. You start believing that you are unsafe because you are creating the worries that make you feel unsafe. You create your own reality in resuspending yourself in alarm by creating these worries in an effort to protect yourself. And hypervigilance becomes your baseline. You're always on the lookout for something. Maybe not consciously, but certainly unconsciously. There's always that sense. Typically, people with an anxiety issue have a hypervigilant startle reflex. I know I do. I jump. I really jump. Not so much anymore, but I definitely used to. So I don't like scary movies because they reactivate this part of me that I feel very uncomfortable with. As a result of all of this stuff, your ego, your defensive, overprotective ego, pulls you out of the present moment and uses the past to create scary future scenarios. And it uses your worries to do that. You feel unsafe now because of what happened back then that you're still storing in your body. But your body doesn't know that the threat isn't real. And your mind on some level doesn't know that the threat isn't real either, because it has a vested interest in keeping you in this hypervigilant state. And while you're in this hypervigilant but familiar state, you feel worked up. You feel anxious. You feel fearful. But it's familiar. And unfortunately, human beings equate familiarity in their childhood with security. So there's the old Freudian repetition where you unconsciously replicate the chaos and feeling in your childhood, in your adulthood. So you may pick a partner that was very similar to an abusive parent or a neglectful parent because that was familiar to you. Human beings unconsciously couple safety with familiarity. And what was familiar to you, unconsciously, you will think is safe, but is not safe. It's like a person who marries an alcoholic who had an alcoholic parent. It's so familiar that it feels secure to their subconscious mind, but they realize in their life consciously that this is hurting them. Now, you might ask yourself, what's the antidote to this ego overdrive? Well, you can't dismantle what you can't see. So becoming aware of your protective patterns gives you a choice. The presence, present moment awareness, interrupts that alarm anxiety cycle and that fear loop, because the ego has only an existence in the past, in your fears, or the future, which is your worries. So when you bring yourself into the present moment, you start developing this sense of awareness and choice that, oh, I don't have to follow that pattern anymore. I see a lot of people who blame themselves for their anxiety, and it's not really their fault on a number of levels, but we are born as human beings with this fear bias. We are wired to worry. And humans evolved to overdetect danger. It helped our ancestors survive, and it was useful back then. But now it just creates suffering. I have this little saying that primitive man feared their predators and modern man fears their creditors, because most of our threats now are emotional. They're not physical, but we react as if they are physical. We react as if we're in physical danger. If there are predators actually waiting to shred us alive. But we're actually doing that to ourselves by not allowing ourselves to see that we're creating this for ourselves. And the awareness allows you to say, I'm not going to do this anymore. And now it may take a while to get through that. But when you put your hand on your chest, when you take a breath, when you breathe in, when you feel the younger version of you and you see them, hear them, open to them, understand them, love them, and defend them, that younger version of you, you start taking away that fear response, that alarm. You start lowering that alarm in the child's body, which is your body. And as the alarm lowers, the need for the mind to make sense of that alarm lowers as well. So you get less worries. And on top of that, you don't believe the worries so much when they come up. So what was once a tool for your survival now creates this chronic stress, this chronic alarm and anxiety. And your brain interprets imagined threats, money, love, health, as life or death. And the result is a flood of anxiety chemicals. And we follow this pattern over and over and over again. So it becomes ingrained in us. It becomes a procedural memory or an implicit memory or a body memory. Now that body memory of fear creates this protection that we believe is protecting us, but it's just making us more fearful. So this hypervigilance that we believe is helping us keep safe is actually making us more fearful. Whatever you focus on, your brain will give you more of that. So if you focus consciously or unconsciously on fear, you will get more fear. And this is how the protective system becomes overprotective and self-sabotaging and actually creates more anxiety and alarm then it resolves. Essentially, you're biting your own tail. We are creating worries to try and protect ourselves from the alarm, which creates more worries. And it just forms this cycle of self-created suffering that we can't get out of. And we believe that that cycle is actually protecting us, but it's actually making us worse. The worry itself has become the thing that hurts you. And like a dog biting its own tail, it just creates more pain. And as we get more pain, we need a reason for it. So we create more worries. I'm here to show you how to break the cycle through awareness and choice. And the moment you recognize you're in the alarm anxiety cycle, you begin to gain some freedom. And you don't have to live in the fear of fear, because awareness lets you consciously release what no longer serves you, rather than unconsciously fulfilling this Freudian repetition compulsion that because you had stress and fear and abandonment and neglect and loss through childhood, that you have to recreate that in your adulthood. You need to see this so you don't have to be it. And I think it's so important to understand that you're in control of your own destiny here. And this is something I didn't realize for a long, long time, because I wanted, put in quotation marks, I wanted to go back to worry because it was familiar. And in that familiarity, it felt secure. But it just created a life of every once in a while, I'd feel okay. But most of the time, I lived in this hyper-vigilant, sympathetic fight or flight state that was very, very uncomfortable. And I don't want you to have to live there, because that type of living is not worth living. And traditional therapy doesn't address this. Trying to fix the mind with the mind just doesn't work. You can't think your way out of a feeling problem. And real healing happens only when you connect to the alarm and not avoid it, because that alarm is a younger version of you. When you connect to that alarm, you connect to the younger version of you that's created the alarm in the first place. And you get a chance to go back and do what I call should. This is what they should have received back then, the child in you. You should see them, hear them, open to them, understand them, love them, and defend them. When you can do that, when you can see your child's eyes, when you close your eyes and you can see your own eyes when you were a child, and see them, hear them, open to them, understand them, love them, and defend them. Then you start dropping the alarm in the system. And the alarm is what's driving the thoughts. So all these traditional therapies that are trying to teach you to fix your thoughts aren't really getting at the root cause, which is this younger version of you, who needs your help, who needs you to connect with them, because they're scared. Adult you has so much more skills than child you. Adult you can see that they're in alarm. Child you can't. So it's your job as adult you to see that child and pull them out of that old pain into the present moment. All anxiety, difficult, severe anxiety, I believe is an age regression, because the amygdala in our brain has no sense of time. So when we get triggered, we go back to that helpless six-year-old and we feel exactly the same way now that we did back then. So when we have this portal to this younger version of us that's hurting, we can use that portal to see them, hear them, open to them, understand them, love them, and defend them. That's how we heal. That's how we get through anxiety. That's how you overcome this and start living a life that you're in control of rather than your anxiety controlling you. And to heal your anxiety, you've got to feel your way through it. And I get it. Feeling your pain is hard. This is why I wrote Anxiety RX. This is why I created MBRX, is to give you a way that allows you to heal yourself. Nobody's going to be able to heal you. No doctor, medication, supplement, nothing like that is going to heal you. You have to heal yourself. You have to connect with that younger version of you and show them they're seen, heard, open to, understood, loved, and defended. That's how you heal from anxiety. There are ways that'll help you cope, understanding your thoughts, CBT, ACT, all these things are helpful. But to really heal, you have to go and you have to soothe the alarm that sits in your body. The alarm that's in your body is creating the anxiety of your mind. And until we recognize that as a society and realize that we have to treat the body and the mind. In fact, we probably have to treat the body more than the mind. And once you treat the body, once you treat the alarm, the thoughts just disappear. The worries just fade away, or you don't pay much attention to them. You don't give them any credibility because you're not stuck in that alarm state. So when we retrain our overprotective ego with awareness and a sense of safety in our body, this is the foundation of how you heal. And this is the foundation of my work, is to understand that you don't have a thinking problem. You have a feeling problem. And resolving anxiety is not so much about feeling better. It's getting better at feeling. It's getting better at taking the emotions in your everyday life and being able to allow yourself to feel them in awareness where you are connected with that younger version of you who maybe did get bit by a dog, who maybe was hurt in some way by their parents or their peers. Finding them, connecting with them, that's how we heal. That's how we heal at the root cause. All this other stuff, all this other ways of thinking better, thinking positive, that's all the tip of the iceberg. You'll feel a little bit better, but until you actually go deeper and go into that body, go into that deeper body of alarm and start melting that and healing that, that's when we truly start to heal. And that's what I want to get across to you and everyone who is in the healing space, because this is the true root of healing, as opposed to just teaching you how to cope. And I wish I knew this stuff when I was in my 20s. My life would have been completely different. And I don't want you to have to suffer with anxiety the way that I did. So that's why I wrote the book. That's why I created MBRX. That's why I do this podcast. I don't want you to have to suffer with anxiety the way that I did, because you don't have to. And I'll see you next time. Thank you so much for listening to the Anxiety RX podcast. I created this show because I don't want you to have to suffer with anxiety the way that I did. And I truly wish I'd known this stuff 30 years ago. It would have changed everything for me. For more support, please explore my best-selling book, Anxiety RX, or my very affordable online program, MBRX. Remember, all anxiety is separation anxiety, and mostly separation from that hurt part of you. So keep holding on to that part of you that hurts, and I'll see you next time.